Hey, welcome back to an episode of Good Chance BYR.
It's me, Joe.
And we're usually been doing this for Halloween, where we talk about a horror movie. And this time, Joey suggested good old Alien. Alien. Now, not Aliens, the movie that everyone believes is the best one. And I do agree with that statement. It's not the best one.
Yeah, we're going back to the original Alien.
From 1979, in this little retrospective we have. Not an in-depth retrospective, but, you know, it's basically retrospective, because we're not really reviewing the movie. We're just talking about how our thoughts on the movie and how much we actually kind of liked it.
Yeah, not too deep into it, but yeah, it was kind of interesting going and watching this movie.
It's an influential horror film, and yeah. You see why.
Like, it feels that, because, I mean, the last two horror movies we talked about for Halloween were obviously Halloween and
Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
Like, and also American Werewolf in London, which is still one of my favorite horror
yeah,
films.
Yeah, which is like, a lot of those are a bit more, I guess, grounded in like sort of the supernatural.
Slash real. Well,
I mean, I would say like American Werewolf and
Evil Dead are very supernatural.
Yeah, supernatural. Halloween is very more in line with like serial killer, like slasher films sort of vibe.
There is kind of a bit of supernaturalness to, you know, Michael Myers. Now you mention it.
Well, I guess in terms of just how insanely durable he is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like he's supposed to be like a, like thematically he's like this force of nature. Right.
Yeah, and when it comes to Alien, we go into the sci-fi era of horror, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know. And I need to double-check, when did Star Wars come out?
1977, I believe, right?
Yeah, okay, so that makes more sense now. Because this feels like right off the coattails of that.
No, I definitely agree with that. Especially with how the ship itself, the Nostromo, is designed and, like, sort of functions. It definitely, I mean, one is a commercial like hauling ship or whatever.
Yeah.
But two, it's like, you know, it's very like it looks dingy, right? Like it looks like
it looks dirty.
Yeah. You know, it's like that.
It's
sort
lived
of,
in.
Yeah, that sort
it's even funnier than you mentioned that because one of the things about the new Alien movie Romulus that a lot of people really like is that it feels like it's more connected to that to the original and like the original movies, right? Because instead of going in the more you know, what we perceive the future to be.
Very clean aesthetic, stuff like that,
think
right?
Very clean aesthetics, very much like, you know, touch screens, sort of stuff that, you know, Apple kind of, not Apple, but, you know, Apple-esque stuff.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's, I guess the best example would be the, like, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies compared to the first few Star Trek shows, you know? Where this one feels very analog.
Yeah.
And then you can tell, like, there's a lot of stuff that means, like, man, this feels like it's an 80s movie off the bat from the screens. Everything feels so analog.
Right.
It feels like it's lived in, and that's something I do agree with, like, the art direction of this movie for that. It's old, dingy, it's a future, but not, like, an unrecognizable future.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously it also helps set up the horror aspects when, you know, you have the dark, barely lit area, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like it all serves the purpose of creating a whole horror movie in space, right?
Yeah, and like, speaking of art directions, one of the most well-known things about Aliens is that the design and a lot of the aesthetics, especially when they go into that of the planet, was it's clearly designed by H.R. Giger, who...
Mm-hmm.
Is known for, like, all these, like, really weird, dark, art. And it's even funnier because, like, so I kind of went on a little, trip on, not like an actual trip, but, like, a little, like, you know.
Down the rabbit hole.
Down the rabbit hole, you know. I was Alice. About Dune and how, I'm gonna butcher his name, but it's like a South American director who was going to direct a Dune movie. He had like Salvador Dali in it.
Mm-hmm.
He had like a bunch of other artists working on it, and one of those artists was H.R. Giger. But because the movie kind of like, you know, fell apart, because that's kind of the story of Dune until like recent, right? With Denis Villeneuve, he eventually just used a lot of the designs that was for that Dune movie into this the Alien movies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like this really cool, like knowing that and seeing it, like, man, I kind of see it. You know, what maybe like Denis Villeneuve was inspired by, but also like this idea of what Dune could have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of cool that we're still able to use like that kind of art in there.
Yeah, no, I definitely follow your
mm-hmm.
train of like inspiration there. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if anything, it's always I won't lie, that was something I kind of forgot about Alien, was that, you know, a lot of designs, especially like the Alien, was by H.R. Geiger.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of like hard to disassociate the two, but
yeah,
if you're not someone who's very well versed in like the arts or like, you know, film design or like the making of all that kind of stuff, you probably wouldn't know. Kind of like how I don't expect people to know, oh my god, what's his name? He did like a lot of he ends up doing a design for the second Aliens with the machine, but he also did Blade Runner. I know him because he also did like the Turn A Gundam, and somehow I brought Gundam into this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's a well-known like concept artist, and he's very good with like future stuff. But I mean, as I slowly look through my phone to find out who designed it, anything you want to add on to there?
In terms of I guess design wise, I mean, obviously the Alien itself is very iconic.
Oh hell yeah!
I mean, granted, you know, considering what this movie is, you know, you don't get to see a whole lot of the Alien.
No, but it's the presence it gives.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, should we just call it a xenomorph for now, right?
Cause, yeah, because I mean, I don't think they call it a xenomorph.
Yeah, no, because this is the first time, you know, they've ever
seen
something, it.
That's the thing I really did like about this movie, too. It's just, it's very simple. Like, you can see how they went off and became more elaborate as they go on. A little more contrived, in my opinion, as they continue to go.
Yeah, I get that, because, I mean, realistically, I mean, yeah, this movie obviously is just a sort of, you know, you have a alien creature that gets onto a spaceship, you know, there's really nowhere to run, and it just kills people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the second one, Aliens, which is kind of changes the genre into an action flick.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a ton of aliens, you have, you know, your military stuff going on, and then, you know, the rest of them, I can't really put off the top of my head, but Alien 3 goes back to being a bit more horror, and then you got Resurrection, which just...
No one talks about it.
No one wants to talk about that one.
Yeah,
obviously you have, like, the spinoff, like, Prometheus, right? Which is supposed to be, like...
Kind of like a pseudo-prequel.
Pseudo-prequel?
Then it's, like, a Covenant, and then you have...
new one, Romulus.
Romulus, which is set in between, I think, 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, it's one of those things where, like... As we went further down, we got a little more contrived, which is funny because compared to something like The Predator, which is like these two things that kind of like share the same space,
mm-hmm.
you know, The Predator just kind of became it still contains to be something simple.
Well, yeah, because I think the concept of Predator was always interesting, right? It's an alien hunter that
mm-hmm.
has like an honor code, basically. I mean, yeah, more or less, they added the honor code stuff in Predator 2, but... You know, like, it's pretty simple design. Like, you can fit that story in anywhere, right? You can fit it into, you know, into a Colombian jungle or whatever with drug cartels and stuff. You can fit it into, you know, modern L.A. You can fit it into...
Well, it was New York, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones in a strange planet to the most recent one, Prey, which is Native American, you know.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Which is like, obviously that's hella cool
mm-hmm.
idea to even think about, right? Futuristic alien with high advanced tech versus Native Americans with just, you know, stone tools and stuff. That is pretty cool
mm-hmm.
when you look at, you know, think about that idea. But with aliens, it's more of like, I guess they kind of got wrapped into the extended lore of what the hell the aliens are.
There's been a lot of extended lore from comics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like, they're still kind of doing, like... comics, like right now there's a Marvel versus Aliens comic, like it's called Avengers versus Alien. I've read the first issue, fantastic issue, it is really good.
Mm.
Like really, really good. like from the, I mean, there's some things that I'm like not agreeing with, but I'm very much looking forward to what comes out of that. At the time, it's still, you know, going. But I really enjoyed that first issue. But no, it just kind of tells you how very accessible, maybe not just like Predator, but also like Aliens is.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Aliens is always kind of a little more convoluted.
No, yeah, no, definitely, because like all those movies add to the lore of the Xenomorphs and what the hell they are and you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, obviously Prometheus even goes further into like how did this all happen? You know, it's like.
Because that's when we got introduced to the space jockeys. I think they give them a different name by the time of Prometheus.
Yeah, I think they give them like an actual like name. The engineers, I think,
yeah,
is what they're called.
I think that's what they're called.
Yeah, because they were the ones that made the alien, the Xenomorphs, I believe. Again, like as we were about to explain, very convoluted.
Yeah.
You know, because again, because it's like the first movie, very simple idea. You know, a bunch of people hear distress signal, find an alien ship. Right, they find these eggs things, one of them attaches itself onto one of the crew members, here's like a parasite, and then, you know, it's like, okay, I guess that's over with, until it just friggin' chestburster comes
which
out.
Is, yeah, no, that is definitely an iconic scene.
Yeah, I won't lie, like, as much as, you know...
Like, it's imperied the hell.
Imperied the hell out of, like, still seeing it. In the, you know, watching the movie and knowing that scene's gonna happen and seeing it all play out, still kind of gets you a little
bit. It still gets you.
It's like, Jesus Christ.
Well, it's because, like, I feel like in most films, they kind of don't build up to it as much, right?
Yeah.
Like, you see it, and then they're... Like, I'm immediately thinking of Alien vs. Predator Requiem, right? Where there was that scene where the father and son get hit with the chestburster. And the sun goes like, ugh, and then pop, right?
Right.
Like, there's no build-up, where in here, it's like, it's a lot of build-up. Like, it's fighting to get out. I think also because there's that bone-crushing.
A little bit,
The bone-crushing where it's like, it's, you can hear it trying to, crush through the
rib cage,
and stuff. And it's just like, ugh, and there's just a lot more blood going around.
Yeah, and I mean... Even thinking to when this movie would have first come out, right? Like, just imagining... Because, you know, the whole scene plays out with, like, oh, this... The facehugger is on...
Mm-hmm.
Kane, I think, is the character's name. You know, and then it, you know, falls off like it's dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, I feel great, you know? Let's just, you know...
Like, it's like nothing happens. Like, well, no, clearly something happened.
Yeah, and it's like you're kind of waiting, like, okay, what's going on? And then you just say, oh, God, you know? Like,
yeah, because it starts off very normal, because you just... Kind of like the characters, you feel like it's just he's just choking on something.
Yeah, until it's like, oh dear God, like because there's that moment where they hear, I think, yeah, like you say, they hear the bone crunch, like what the hell is going on? Then it's the blood splats out, right, and then it just keeps going and going until the chest burster is out, and it's just like
it's really good.
Yeah.
Speaking of like of that like the buildup, you before we did this, we were talking about the atmosphere. What is it, the atmosphere or the the tension.
Yeah, I think watching the movie, you know, I sort of got the nice, like, like I said, like, tension that builds throughout the whole thing. It's like a very, I think I mentioned saying it before, like, this is like, it feels like the textbook definition of a slow burn kind of thing, where it's like, obviously you have... Because obviously this alien is more or less just the second half of the movie. Like, for a good chunk of this first half of the movie, it's just, you know...
A straight sci-fi movie.
Yeah, you know, it's just a crew going out exploring this alien planet because they hear a distress signal from who knows what the hell it is.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you get to sort of take in all the scenes and, like, you know, the alien ship, like, the dead jockey, right? Like... Just all this sort of stuff and, like, the visuals.
Mm.
You know, it's a, you know, like I said, very atmospheric, you know, movie.
It
sort of, like, dwells you in sort of the tension of, like, okay, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, yeah. For me, I think the epitome was the opening scene where we're just panning from in space as, like, the
title.
The title just slowly
appears.
Crawls.
Yeah.
Because what was the tagline for this movie was, like, in space, no one can hear you scream.
Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, it's true, because like there is no...
There's no sound in space.
There's no sound in space, but I think it's just one of those like really like foreboding, but like feeling that space is a very terrifying, you know, place to be. There is nothing but pure, you know, darkness and cold and, like, sort of this unfeeling. It's, like, one of the things, like, you know, why I think people like to do cosmic horror, like, when they were, or, like, you know, Lovecraftian horror,
mm-hmm.
where it's, like, you know, in the ocean, it's just big water.
Blue, nothing there, right?
Nothing there, but once you go further in, it's like, there's something down there.
Yeah.
You don't know what it is, but there's something down there. And just like in this movie, you know, space is cold and dark, and you don't know what's out there. You don't know. You found, like, this ancient dead civilization and this unstoppable creature that is out to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
It very much sets that tone, and I really, really love that opening scene. It's so, so good. You were saying about the xenomorph. I was reading somewhere that they kind of designed the head to be so very much similar to a skull.
Mm.
Which I'm like, yes, I see it. And that kind of, like, makes it more terrifying for me.
Because
mm-hmm. it's almost make it, like, sort of the personification of death.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that, you know. Mm. Especially since it's, like, a black, you know, all black, right? Like, you get that Grim Reaper vibe, right?
Mm.
That is kind of interesting in sort of analysis
mm-hmm.
of how that goes. I mean, I'm trying to think here, because, I mean, I think the world building of Alien is very interesting, too. I mean, heck, like, the fact that you have, like, they came up with such an interesting, like, creature, right? Like, it starts off as an egg, and, like, this weird, almost, like, insectoid, like, tarantula-looking thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's a parasitic creature that, like...
I forget the name, but there was an artist that H.R. Giger was inspired by when it came to designs. But the idea of, like, you know, the
face-hugger.
The face-hugger was, like, to be, like, you know, the hands wrapping around your face.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an idea that is very terrifying. And, like, yeah, there's a lot of, like, subtext that a lot of people have added to it. And I think that kind of just further adds to the horror of it.
Yeah, yeah, there's obviously some interest. I think I know there are some readings that people do, a lot of it being, like, I guess I can't, I don't know if I can say the word.
Yeah, let's not say that word.
You know, of, like...
But, like, people know what we're talking about.
Yeah, of a certain type of, you know, thing that happens, right, with people that do very bad things to others, you know?
Yeah.
Again, I won't say, but, you know, you can look it up, those analyses, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, no, I kind of see what they mean by that, right? But, yeah, no, I mean, gosh, it's just sort of a lot to talk about, I guess, that my brain is trying to wrap around. But more importantly, with Alien was, I guess, sort of the characters, right?
Oh, yeah. It's even funny because, like, okay, so when did Halloween 1 come out?
Halloween 1, it was definitely the 70s.
It was definitely the 70s. It was around that era, because it was around the era of, like, these, you know, serial killer kind of movies, right?
I think, yeah, 1978 was the first Halloween.
Really? Okay, so it was a year before this movie. Because the thing I really found interesting was Sigourney Weaver's, you know, Ripley.
Yeah.
She is very commanding. She is very much a powerful figure. She is, like, the complete opposite of what we have seen at this point, or would be accustomed to see in these kind of horror movies, right? Where, not to say it's a negative, right? It's like, or, like, to say things bad about
other horror
movies.
Or
horror
movies. Yeah.
They have their, you know, but she is someone who is clearly, at times, afraid, but has to contain composure.
Yeah, she knows she has what she needs to do. I mean, I even agree, because, like, she, as a character, like, she often seems to be the one that has the most, I guess, makes the most sense, and,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, thinks a lot through a lot of things. I mean, heck, she's the one that's, like, you know, like, we can't bring, you know,
so-and-so in because
of
quarantine. Been contaminated.
Yeah,
yeah,
like, we have to do protocol here. Obviously, she's being sabotaged by
Ash
the
robot.
The robot, you know.
Which I definitely want to get into him.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, she's usually like the one that sort of like, heck, even the captain like sort of gives command to sometimes like, all right, you come with me because I trust your judgment sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, you know, she still has disagreements with a lot of characters.
I mean, she went back for a cat.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hate animals, but I'm like,
Hey, listen, the cat, you know, the cat's all innocent in all this.
Fair
know?
Enough. The cat has seen so much. He was the first, he saw someone get face bitten off, I guess.
Oh, I mean, yeah, that cat's been just involved in a whole lot of shenanigans.
It's like, right. Oh my god, don't leave me.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, I do think, you know, that's sort of, and of course, you know, Ripley evolves throughout the Alien franchise herself, you know, because this is just like, you know, seeing her character.
Yeah, she becomes an action hero by the second movie.
Yeah, like, it is pretty cool, and obviously, I think probably focus more on that in the second movie, of like, oh, this is a strong, you know, woman
but even
protagonist.
Even in the first one, she's still a strong protagonist.
Yeah, like, she clearly is
she
outmatched.
Commands, yeah, she's outmatched, but she commands a presence.
Yeah.
She is a woman that is respected in her field, which is, like, so cool. And, like, so, this is what I'm saying, like, not to talk negatively about, you know, Lori from Halloween, the movie we discussed, like, last time, but, because she still somehow overcomes a lot of trouble, but she's kind of meant to be, like, the final girl, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
the one that, you know, is innocent in all this, and somehow they will pull through. Here, you're like, yeah, no, I can totally see how Ripley was able to at least survive.
Mm-hmm.
She
yeah.
has survival instincts.
Yeah.
And, like, her being that commanding presence is just so refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ash. Fuck. yeah, Ash, I think this is the same character I want to talk about, who, I mean, this movie's been out since 79, so if you haven't known already, plus, I think it's a staple of the
Alien franchise to always have one weird android.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I would argue to say he's like the secondary villain.
Well, yeah, because the whole reason the Nostromo even goes to the alien planet in the first place is because it's all part of this whole thing with the corporation, which isn't it, I forget the name. I mean, they don't mention it here, but I'm pretty sure
it's a Japanese name, I think. It's a Japanese conglomerate.
Yeah.
The way it goes. By the way, that designer I was talking about, his name was Sid Mead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking it up now, but continue what you're saying.
Yeah, so, but, you know, it's, you know, their whole thing of, like, we, you know, bring back the alien creature that's there, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, all crew expendable, that sort of thing. You know, it's a very, because he's supposed to be the science officer, and you have, you know, it's pretty much one of those things of, like, you can already tell, even before
Weyland Yutani.
Yeah, Weyland Yutani, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Even before, like, all the shit that goes down in that movie, right? Like, he's very
he's very off. And, like, the whole for a reason I thought it was someone else who was the robot, but then I remembered, oh, wait, he doesn't show up till the next movie.
David, I think you're thinking
about. Yeah, I was thinking about David.
Yeah. Because I think he was in 2?
He was in 2, and then later on in some other Alien franchise, because, like, he's kind of like the recurring character aside from Ripley.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you know, obviously, he's the, like, yeah, I would agree, secondary, like, villain or antagonist. And he's actively, like, he's fascinated by the xenomorph.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the perfect life form, right?
Yeah.
And that sort of thing.
He views it as something that is, in his words, pure. Which, again, kind of goes to, like, the whole idea of, like, what this the monster is. It's this, you know, pure killing machine. It's just a very simple thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Kind of like this movie. It's very simple. It doesn't try to go too, you know, too much. And the reveal of the company being the one in, you know, kind of makes this seem a little, I wouldn't say a lot more darker, but a little more interesting of a world, right?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think it leans into, like, almost like a sort of a, I guess, maybe a critique of, like, corporations a little bit,
mm-hmm.
of, like, being more invested in the bottom line, because, I mean, heck,
I mean, William Newtani is, like, one of the bigger villains in the whole franchise.
Yeah. Although, again, it's always, when you think about it, it's like, now, why on earth would you want to somehow try to control the xenomorphs? And why would you even think you could control the xenomorph? That's
yeah.
the real question here. You
there seems to be, like, also a level of, why would you hold, if you design it by essentially sacrificing people, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like there's a level of, even like, some level of morality going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're face of evil. Capitalism.
Yeah, but, you know, it is obviously interesting. I mean, heck, when he turns, I mean, heck, the whole, like, weird white liquid stuff, like, which I'm assuming is milk of some type,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's milk. Funny enough, Ridley Scott has been using that kind of idea in a lot of other projects. I think there was that one show that was on HBO, something about wolves, or where the robots had like a little white liquid. I'm like, sure.
I don't know. I guess it's a very unsettling image, especially once they, you know, like basically decapitate him.
Yeah, and he spits it out.
Yeah, it's just like, ugh.
We also gotta remember this is like early 80s. They didn't really. It was rated R, yes, but they didn't know how far they can go rated R.
Fair enough. And it does add, and I think, to be fair, it does add a bit to his inhumanity, right?
Yes, it does.
Just, like, this is, you thought this man was an actual dude, but he's a weird android that basically bleeds milk or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like, that's just weird.
Like, it's one of those things, like, you know, like you said, it's inhuman. And I immediately think of something like like machines, they wouldn't bleed red. They would something black oil or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like how I mean, especially thinking of like the anime Devilman Crybaby, how all the demons kind of like squeeze out yellow, which like some people are like, why isn't it blood? And I'm like, well, technically, I think it's supposed to be like yellow because it's not human. You associate red with human.
Right. Yeah.
Like red blood with human, you know.
Yeah.
Like what? And the xenomorph bleeds green.
Yeah, and it's acid, which,
yeah.
It's funny because I find it interesting how, I mean, granted, I think, you know, it's the first movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
They only have that acid blood stuff when it's a facehugger,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, they never, like, I guess they assume, like, oh, it just bleeds acid no matter what, but
mm-hmm.
it's like, how do we know that the adult xenomorph can bleed acid?
It wasn't until later.
Yeah, it wasn't until later, right?
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, you can see, like, this is the stepping stone to what later would be, like, a lot of the other stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, so Ripley does survive at the end. And I kind of like the way it is. She survives.
Yeah, it's not too, like, almost action-packy, right? It's very
no,
much...
it's quiet.
Yeah, like, she opens the...
Well, yeah, once she snoops it out.
Yeah, like, she opens up the...
Escape lock,
you know... And then blast the alien out. Granted, it still sort of holds on a bit, but she fires the engines to basically have it latch off the shuttle. And then she sort of just has to essentially go into cryo sleep and hope that someone can just find her in the deep space or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is sort of an interesting way of, like, finishing off the alien.
I think it's also because, like, of budgetary constraints. Because we were talking about, like, you can tell this is made in a small budget. Like, most of the budget went to, like, the not just the design of the xenomorph,
but like, the sets. Probably,
that's,
yeah.
Like, that's where, like, the big thing was. Because I was always, like, I was thinking, like, man, how do they do this? I could totally see them building a giant set, but I'm also thinking about it because, like, nowadays I'm so used to, like, it being somewhat CGI.
Yeah, just a lot of CG and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not to
crap on the CGI artists. They do a fantastic job when they're allowed to.
When they give them time.
When they give them time, goddammit.
You know, they're not crunched to death.
Yep. But no, this is one of those moments where I'm like, dang, how did they pull this off? Because this is before all that... This wasn't before green screen, was it?
I think it was at the tail... Like, at the start of green screening stuff.
Ah, okay.
Because, obviously, Star Wars had a bit of the blue screen stuff happening in certain things.
Mm.
So, I mean... I'm pretty sure, like, the ships were obviously miniatures that they shot on, like, a back...
Oh, that end was definitely a miniature.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, all the money went to the sets, because, like, a lot of the times they would, like, find a way to hide, a lot of the character deaths.
I mean, Probably, yeah, but they also, you know, I think it's more of just the Xenomorph suit itself, right? Because, you know, when you look at the Xenomorph suit, I think from the original Alien in, like, broad daylight, it does look a little silly, like a guy in a costume kind of way, which is, you know, part of the reason why everything's kind of dark, right? And, like, they cut away from the kills because it's, like, you can have close-ups on the Xenomorph and stuff's face and stuff, so that way it's, like, you focus on...
Whose death was it where you can clearly see the alien going like, ah, you know?
That was the captain.
That's the one,
because he has the flamethrower. He's going to try to kill it with the flamethrower, but then it comes up behind him or whatever.
That one, because I was like, that's a guy in a suit.
Yeah, like that's probably the one shot where you can be like, okay, that's a little silly.
That is... But yeah, no, that's... I think I do like how they kind of went around with it, like you're saying, like, you know, it's all dark, everyone's in like, you know, quick shots.
Yeah, which I'm not going to say it's inspired by, like, say, something like Jaws, right? Because, I mean, Jaws is more of a, you know, they wanted to use the mechanical shark, but the mechanical shark didn't work all the time, so they had to, like, not show it a lot of times. Mm-hmm. But in not showing a lot of it, the shark, a lot of the times, that builds the suspense and the scariness of the shark, because you don't, you know... It's like, you know it's a shark, but you don't know how big it is. You never see it half the time, but then when you finally see it, it's like, oh yeah.
Not just that, it's just like, how often would you see a shark in the water?
Fair enough, but still, I would say, like, it has that sort of similar vibe of scariness of, like, you don't see it fully and clearly, so you're kind of just left to your imagination of what the full thing looks like, right?
And to be fair, the music doesn't have a lot of lifting.
Yeah, it is. Music. Heck, even the music in this movie is very atmospheric, very...
Oh, yeah.
Builds up the tension
mm-hmm.
a lot of the times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously, you know, there's also the silence.
Yeah.
Like you said in the opening, just that pure, like, silence.
Pure silence.
It's just, like...
It's quiet. It's kind of unnerving.
Yeah.
Because there's a time where even I feel like, where, like, say I'm alone in the house and everything's just quiet, I'm like, I don't like it.
Yeah, you know, it's like, that's just weird, right? Like, having pure silence sometimes is just very
uneasy.
Because in real life, right, there's always noises happening outside your house, you know, that stuff. When there's nothing, no sound whatsoever, it's like...
When you're in the forest, you can hear the wind hitting the trees.
And you hear the bugs and, yeah, you know, all that stuff. And then when you hear nothing, it's like, oh, that's, I don't like that at all.
The sound is terrifying.
Yeah.
You can use it like a quick jump scare, yes, but, like, just for both silence and something in the dark moving, that is fear. That is fear. That is the most human fear there is.
Which is why it's scary that in space no one can hear you scream.
Exactly.
Gosh, is there anything else we want to add to?
I think, like, all the characters, they're very one note, but I think that's kind of the point in some of these horror movies, you know?
Yeah, and it works into your whole, it's simple.
It's
right?
Simple.
It's a simple story, simple. Yeah.
Because the thing about, and this has kind of been the big issue with some of, like, the more recent ones, specifically, like, Prometheus, the one that goes into very much, like, and that one's also directed by Ridley Scott, where it becomes a little big too much, you know. Like, this is everything, and you're like, I don't really need that much explanation, you know. And granted, I think it's because, like, some people may have grown up with, like, all the extended lore that you would find in, say,
the comics,
books, or whatever.
Yeah. So it almost has that bit of that prequel approach from the Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
There were, like, you know, books of the extended, like, of the, you know, expanded universe from Star Wars that kind of goes into what happened before, you know, episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Because
I think I remember the specifically one where it reimagines Clone Wars being, like, actual, like, clones of people, right?
I think that's what it was, yeah.
I think so.
There's a lot of different ones. They kind of mostly focused on the in-betweens and afters. I mean, but to be fair, the afters weren't more until, like, after the prequels, I believe. Because, like, the extended universe in Star Wars has always been kind of messy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, people like to think it's simple. Like, no.
It gets kind of weird.
It got weird.
Chewbacca gets crushed by a moon.
Which is kind of cool.
Which, yeah, it's kind of, yeah.
If you're going to go out, that's a cool way to go.
It's a cool way to go.
But it's kind of a punk thing to do with Chewbacca.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, yeah, I think it's because, like, I remember, like, the space jockeys before Prometheus were, like, these elephant-looking aliens, because...
Yeah, because that's the
iconic look.
Yeah, that's the look of the space jockey, but then it's like, oh, it's just these giant, pale
dudes,
and the space jockey is just its spacesuit.
And I'm like, that's kind of lame.
Yeah.
That's kind of lame.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I get it. Don't get me wrong, I get that, right? Because that's always the thing that can happen with prequels, right?
Yeah.
With that stuff, you know, it's like, oh, you know, this thing, yeah, it's actually this. And it's like, well, that kind of makes it kind of lame now.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's like discovering that the biggest, baddest guy in Star Wars was a whiny little dude.
Whiny kid at the start of it all.
Well, I mean, I get it.
I mean, yeah.
Like on paper, that makes sense, but the way you executed it was like, nah, I'm good, bro. I'm good.
Then you realize Jar Jar Binks had a lot to do with the fall of the Galactic Republic when you
he
think
did.
About it.
He instated war.
The funny, kooky character.
Without him, there would have been no war.
No emergency powers for Palpatine.
Oh my god.
I mean, you know, they probably would have found a way to...
They probably would have found a way.
But it's just funny when you think about, oh
yeah,
Jar Jar kind of...
he was indeed the key.
He was the key to all of this.
He was indeed.
But yeah, I think that's all I got to say.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I feel like, ideally I could talk about how, yeah, we could talk about how later movies kind of just expanded on it, but considering how I kind of avoided both of them, or more like, didn't really care.
Well, yeah, because I think we already kind of mentioned just how crazy and kooky the alien lore kind of gets.
Yeah.
And just... You know, it's like, you take what was a simple story and you expand it out, and yeah, a lot of that stuff kind of gets interesting, but then you keep expanding it and, like, nailing more details and, like, stuff down. It's like, okay, this is a little, what? You know?
Yeah, because, like, even Prometheus, we're supposed to have some sort of, like, commentary on something, or, I don't know, there's supposed to be something in there that would have made sense, but I'm just like, do I really need that? Like, I remember hearing that at one point, one character who gets infected with something kind of starts morphing into, like, a xenomorph-like creature.
Mm.
And I'm like, eh, sure. You know?
Right.
And, but no, but, like, the original Alien movie is still something that I really enjoy because, like, it's just something that very much, if, like, you want to do a film involving, like, atmosphere, this is the movie to go with. Like, for all you kids that want to be filmmakers and stuff. That's kind of like for me, like, this is like a really good foreboding movie. And then the next one is like not only good expansion of it, but also like really cool action movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know, do you have any more things to say?
I mean, not really. You know, at the end of the day, you can kind of tell like how that this movie influenced not just on like horror itself, but just specifically on the cosmic horror genre, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of stuff. You just sort of, like, expanding that. Yeah, no, space. Like, because, I mean, yeah, we saw space is fantastical with Star Wars. Alien shows you just how freaking terrifying space can be.
Yeah, which is funny, because I don't think there's that many movies that do that in the way that Alien does it. Because I'm thinking, like, there was a couple movies that have, like, you know, scary stuff in space, but never, like, that cold forebodingness of it.
Yeah, just like, you know, just how empty space is at the end of the day, right? Like, it's more of like usually just some, you know, like alien or like weird creatures that hunt humans down or whatever. But which is kind of like this, but like you have that sense of like you are in a spaceship out in space, far from Earth, nowhere to go, nowhere to run, and you have to just figure out what you can do to survive.
A modern version of this movie is that one Dracula movie that was set in a boat that came out a year or two ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
And yeah, I guess, kind of. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's all for me. Totally a great movie for Halloween for you, all you guys out there. Another classic. If you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to follow us on all social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And On there, you'll find a link to all podcasts. We're officially part of like all podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and a link to YouTube for all your listeners out there who want to put a face to the voice. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, and yeah, we also have a Patreon. If you guys enjoyed what you heard, be sure to let us know. It's me, your boy Eli.
Me, Joe.
And by the time this comes out, it's not Halloween, but like, just a heads up, happy Halloween.
Yep.
You guys have a good one. Peace.